next case we have is Didlake, Inc. versus Allen Brooks. Mr. Wilson and Mr. Cannon. Good afternoon, Mr. Wilson. Would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal, sir?
Yes, Your Honor. 3 minutes.
3 minutes, sure. And you may begin whenever you're ready, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Drew Wilson, and I represent the appellants in this case. This is a workers' compensation claim, and the appellants allege that the commission erred basically in two ways. First, the commission denied the defendant's employers or the appellant's employer's application to terminate wage loss benefits as of August 15th of 2016. And the commission, so that's the first thing. The second thing is the commission erred when it failed to bar the additional claim for a left hip injury, failed to find it was barred by res judicata because of the party's earlier agreement and award that the injury was limited to a lumbar spine.
Does res judicata apply if the matter's not litigated but rather disposed of by an agreement?
I think it does. I think that's the Shy claim, or the Shy case, rather. In that case, it was actually a the defendants, or the claimant, I believe, was arguing that res judicata barred the defendants from coming back and trying to make an argument to suspend benefits because an administrative order had been entered that covered the time period under which the conduct had occurred that defendants were later trying to terminate the award. And so we're using the Shy case to say the administrative award it's a final award. It is just like if the matter was litigated.
Let me ask you on that.
Sure.
Even assuming that's the case, where in the agreement did Mr. Brooks waive, you know, any additional injury to body parts that just hadn't been discovered at the point that agreement was signed with regard to the back or lumbar injury?
Well, there's these are forms that the commission...
the statute of limitations, of course, hadn't run.
That's correct. There is no... these were agreement forms where the parties did agree to the injury and entered an award based on that. There is no express language in there about waiver and that kind of thing. Our argument is that because the claimant was complaining of hip problems before this agreement was entered, he knew about this hip problem.
He'd been trying to get the hip seen, too, and his doctor said, well, I think he may be able to return to work as far as his back issue, but I wanted to see one of my colleagues who's a hip specialist before I release him to go back to work. And eventually he couldn't get the approval at one point to get the hip x-ray or MRI or whatever it was. So when he got that and he saw the hip specialist said this injury is related to the work injury.
Well, I would disagree slightly with those facts, only to say that he's being treated for the hip or he's being treated for a back injury. He is also complaining of this hip injury, but is. And when the doctor says he's clear as far as his spine is concerned, the doctor doesn't go on to say anything about, he doesn't affirmatively address the hip and whether or not
he says, I'm not a hip specialist. I want him to see someone who is.
He doesn't address the hip injury. He doesn't address whether or not he can or cannot work as a result of the hip injury.
He keeps him from work until he sees the hip.
Well, no, he says he can return to work as far as the spine is concerned.
He says, I'm keeping him out of work, until he sees the hip specialist.
What time frame we're talking about here, but I don't think that was the case before. We filed our employer's application.
It was after you filed that, I believe.
Okay.
But at that point, the hip had never been diagnosed, and then the doctor who treated him, who was the hip specialist, said, he had some degenerative issues there before, but it was asymptomatic. He didn't have symptoms or pain until this was exacerbated by the work injury.
That is correct, and we're not challenging that the facts of what that doctor stated, and that was his opinion. We didn't have a contrary opinion. Our argument is that because of the earlier agreement, that his claim now for a hip injury should be barred by res judicata. And it's because he could have raised the issue of the hip and could have pled it, could have had it in that award.
But suppose, we have to think about these cases of not just, of course, this case is important as it is to the court and, of course, most important to the parties, but than any case, but we have to think about how this is going to be interpreted down the road and what precedent it will set. And if anyone doesn't discover you have an injury to a certain body part because you have pain in another area, and so you sign some sort of agreement, not necessarily waiving anything else, but you just so that treatment can begin, it seems like that what you're arguing for would cause people to never be able to add another body part, even if they've had no symptoms in that body part.
Well, I would say that's not. I don't want to go that far. I think the evidence is that he actually had symptoms in that body part, and his doctor actually said, this was Dr. Wallach on April 8th of 2016. He had some pain related to his left hip joint. We're not talking about a back that's causing these problems in the hip. It's a separate injury. It's arthritis in the hip. This is before the award agreement or the award was entered. Actually, before the award agreement was signed, April 12th of 2016. So he's talking about pain related to his left hip joint. The doctor is, I presume the claimant is as well. And then he signs the agreement form April 12th, 4 days later, agreeing that he's got the lumbar strain. That's the extent of his injury. Then the award gets entered. So that's our piece of it. That's what we're arguing, is that the cases talking about res judicata talk about the claims not only that are pled, but that could have been pled. And I don't think the standard is he has to be able to prevail on his claim of a hip injury, or there has to be evidence that he can prevail on his claim of a hip injury before he has to assert it. I think he has to assert this claim, medical, in a workers' compensation claim, the medical is on, you know, ongoing as long as it's causally related, and the claimant is continuing to treat. So it is sort of an ongoing proposition. I think that even if the court should say this additional claim for the hip injury should not be barred by res judicata, I think in the least the commission or the court needs to recognize that what we agreed to, what the parties agreed to, was that we agreed the claimant was disabled from a spine injury as a result of his accident. And that was all we agreed to. We didn't agree from whatever injuries he suffered from the accident.
You made that clear, I think. But, you know, at that point, that's something that the deputy commissioner and then the full commission in their hearings resolved, where you opposed it on the hip, but they found that it was an accident that occurred arising out of and in the course of this.
They did, and the problem is when they went to award benefits as a result of that, wage loss benefits, they didn't cut off the award on August 15th. That's when we filed our employer's application. As of that time, the only award that had been entered was one for disability as a result of the spine.
But didn't they order?
And by that time, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut.
I'm curious about it because I noticed that it said the awards are, the commission or deputy commissioner entered an award retroactively. So I was assuming, based on that at some point the insurance company, somebody stopped paying at a certain point.
We did. We stopped paying on August 15th because we said he's been released from a spine standpoint, and that's the only injury that was awarded at that point. And so what we're and that's our argument in this case. You can't have this retroactive application and go back. We agreed to disability as a result of the spine, and that there was no disability as a result of the spine as of August 15th. At that point, the burden should have shifted to the claimant to show that he had hip disability. And there is nothing in the medical record showing he's disabled as a result of his hip injury before August 15th.
But there is after August 15th, right? I don't mean to keep...
There is after August 15th. I would argue it doesn't exist until November when the doctor specifically takes him out of work, the specialist. I'm here into my rebuttal time, so I would like to reserve
that. You want to reserve? Sure.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Curtis Cannon on behalf of appellee and claimant Alan Brooks. I would like to address some of the points counsel raised on behalf of the employer and that Judge Beals essentially addressed in many of your questions. I want to start with what he mentioned last about the retroactivity of this the disability. It's factually not correct. There was a disability slip issued August 3rd, okay, which was before the employer's application, which the deputy commissioner and the full commission, as a matter of a factual finding, said that no, that disabled him as a result of the hip injury, because it specifically said from a spine standpoint, thereby carving out the residual hip complaints, okay? And so certainly nothing was retroactive prior to the employer's application, and the statement that the first disability slip is 11-14-16 from Dr. Sabloff is just not true. There's the August 3rd disability note, as I indicated, as well as even the September 2nd, 2016 note from Dr. Wallach, who is not the hip specialist, specifically says, I am keeping him out of work due to the hip complaints. And that was essentially a clarification of the August 3rd disability report, which was issued by Dr. Wallach's physician's assistant. So that wasn't even really Dr. Wallach himself. But he clarified that, look, this, you know, we believe this is due to the hip. And even the August 3rd disability slip really is in reference to a July, I forget the exact date, either 5th or 7th, 2016 report from from the physician's assistant, Barbara McQuarrie. And in the body of the July report, she says, I'm glad the injections helped his helped his back, but he's still having hip complaints for which he needs further management from a hip specialist, okay? And so, you know, and then it was later, she was asked to clarify the disability status based on that visit, and she said, well, from a spine standpoint, I'll release him because the injections did a good job, which clearly carves out the remainder, you know, of the hip, saying, okay, well, he's not released from a hip standpoint. And certainly up to that point, the hip was never part of the claim. I mean, it was never in the claim. And so, what, you know, the employer's position that, well, it could have or should have been because Mr. Brooks had complaints before, these dates of service of hip complaints, you know, that's an unreasonable and ridiculous, frankly, standard to hold a claimant to, that he's supposed to know that he has a intrinsic hip injury versus a lumbar spine radiculopathy, when all of his treating doctors are saying, look, this is a radicular component, and that we believe that, you know, that the hip goes along that nerve distribution. And so they were treating it as if he had a lumbar injury. So everybody believed. The note that counsel referred to on April 12th from Dr. Wallach, counsel left out of the most important word in that report, which says the claimant might have an intrinsic hip issue. At that point, Dr. Wallach didn't know. And if you read that report further on, Dr. Wallach says, but I'm going to treat this with lumbar injections because I believe this is all a lumbar emanating from the lumbar spine. So even at that point, Dr. Wallach didn't know that there was an intrinsic hip injury. If Dr. Wallach didn't know, how could the claimant possibly know in order to somehow preserve these rights when oh, by the way, you know, the adjuster from the insurance company is saying, well, we don't think the hip's any part of anything, so we're not going to approve any x-ray. And I think it's important to note that there was even from the primary care doctor, in May 27th was when Dr. Gehring had requested or written a prescription to get a hip x-ray that, of course, the carrier denied. The award that was entered from the agreement was entered on May 26th, the day before. So if this even rises from suspicion to possibility, you know, none of that even happened until after the award was entered from the commission, let alone, I mean, there's no way Mr. Brooks, who throughout this period was unrepresented, could have possibly preserved his rights. He certainly didn't waive anything. And that's essentially what the cases that are cited regarding res judicata say. You know, look, fine, if you're going to list these body parts on a claim form or you're going to go to an evidentiary hearing and now only claim two out of the four that you listed, you know, then you may have abandoned or waived those body parts. But that's just not the facts in this case, simply not. So, you know, I think that the standard that counsel is arguing is that, you know, a claimant has to somehow assert every possible body part that he might have an ache and pain in. It's just, there's no support in the law, or certainly no support in the statute for that standard. The reality is the claimant has the burden of proof and to prove what is and is not related. I mean,
how do you respond to his argument to you, Mr. Wilson's point that he didn't have the burden of proof, that you didn't have the burden of proof earlier, but you did when you decided to add the hip?
I mean, I have no problem with that. I mean, the reality is at the underlying hearing, when the claimant amended the claim form to add the hip, and even when he responded to the employer's application to terminate benefits, he said, "I can't work because of my hip and I'm limping." And so the deputy commissioner took all of that and treated all of that as a separate claim in and of itself. I mean, so we basically have two ways that the claimant could succeed here. The commissioner could overrule or find against the, excuse, not overrule, deny the employer's application. But also, the claimant had his own claim in itself regarding the hip, which she, as a factual finding, found to be related. I mean, there was a mountain of evidence relating the hip. Of course, the employer had no evidence whatsoever. So, I mean, the claimant certainly carried his burden of proof on his own, individual claim, adding the hip and causally relating that
claim with regard to the hip.
Exactly. I mean, and the commissioner was certainly within her rights, and the full commission within her rights, as a factual finding, to make the inference that the disability related to the hip, could have been found all the way, like I said, all the way back to July of 2016. So a month or so prior to. Even all the way back through the beginning of the claim. Once, finally, in September of 2016 is when Dr. Wallach did the X-ray to the hip and found, that there was an intrinsic hip injury that was asymptomatic and now exacerbated. And so even in Dr. Wallach's report, he says, okay, this hip issue has been here for the full 7 months, even though we're just figuring it out today, but because we finally now got the X-ray. Dr. Wallach's office just basically said, the heck with the authorization. We're just going to give you the X-ray because we need to treat you. Finally getting the X-ray in September, they said, oh, here you go. You have an intrinsic hip injury. Now we definitely have to send you to the hip specialist. This is the real reason, we're here is because ultimately Mr. Brooks underwent a total hip replacement, and it's a significant injury, and the employer knows the only way they're going to get out from under this is to try to say that somehow this is res judicata, and but the facts and the law just it's not on their side. And so I think we've covered everything that I've addressed in my brief. I don't know if there's any other specific questions that the panel might have. If the court will just grant me an indulgence here just to make sure that there aren't any issues that I overlooked. I just would stress that the nature of a symptom does not equate to an injury per se, and to hold the claimant to that standard is just it is unreasonable. There are multiple situations that neck injuries are often difficult to differentiate between shoulder injuries. And I think, as Your Honor pointed out, the real problem that I have here is that if this is really the standard, you're going to have employers and insurers racing to file agreement forms, at the drop of a hat with unrepresented, uneducated, unsophisticated claimants across the Commonwealth who are going to be, cutting parts of their claims out with no idea what they're doing. And then that's essentially, I didn't get involved with this claim until September, October of 2016, and we're sort of playing catch-up at that point. And, I think that's the real danger of this case. Thank you, Ryan.
Made me think of another question. That aside of, the implications of something like that, was there anything in this agreement where anything was waived for the future?
Not that I can see, Your Honor. As counsel, you know, responded similarly, it's just a form agreement. There's nothing that states, you know, that anything is waived or otherwise. Actually, since this case has happened, this changed my practice to make sure that I, you know, we'll see until this ruling comes down, but that I resolve many of these issues now by a stipulated order that I, instead of an agreement form, where I am now in the body of the order specifically saying the claimant reserves all rights to any claims or issues not specifically addressed herein, just because I don't want to be on the wrong side of the decision, you know, down the road, but in any event, I mean, I don't think that's necessary. It's just I'm just doing that as a matter of a caution. But there's nothing in the order or in the form that waives anything. It says, okay, we agree to this. Okay, and again, it's, you know, claimants are going to do that so that they start their benefits. They get treatment that they need, and so it's really a matter of okay, let's get this moving, and then as the medical treatment plays out, you know, there may be additional claims and things that arise.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Sir.
All right. So if we look at page 58 of the appendix, this is the August 3rd note. It's signed, I believe, by the physician's assistant. And it says, able to return to work without restrictions, date of release, July 5th of 2016. We filed the employer's application August 15th. We've got to pay through the date of the employer's application, so that's why the award would terminate on the 15th. It also says patient is cleared for work from a spine standpoint. Dash has been referred to hip specialist for further management. So cleared to work from a spine standpoint, I don't think anybody disagrees that he can return to work because of that. So we have met our burden of showing that he can return to work as of July 5th. Now, with regard to the hip, the problem is before August 3rd of 2016, if you go back and look at the medical records, there are no medical records that continuously take the claimant out of work. It doesn't exist. What the claimant is doing in this claim is trying to glom on, well, first they're saying res judicata doesn't apply, but wait a minute, you already agreed to disability. Well, we agreed to disability for the spine. We didn't agree to disability for the hip, and we're saying the medical records in this claim don't support disability to the hip. Before we filed our employer's application. There is no record before this of ongoing disability. The claimant has to prove that and has not proved that. We have to pay the benefits for the spine up to the date we paid those, but he's got to prove the ongoing disability. He needs contemporaneous medical evidence that the claimant is actually removed from work. And we don't have that in this claim, an affirmative statement. The claimant can't work because of his hip injury until we get to November of 2016. That's what we say the facts show, and would ask the court to reverse the commission. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll come down and greet counsel.
All rise.